time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's Abandoned Manitoba, the celebrity edition. Gordon Goldsmith joins me now. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Yes,
it is. Well, you know, we tend to get really excited when we hear about an American celebrity, you know, whether it's a political figure or a Hollywood star who visits Manitoba. So today we're talking about a pair of larger-than-life Americans, each known better by a fictitious name rather than his real name, who each visited here long ago. Mark Twain and Buffalo Bill.
I'm excited. Let's go.
Okay, let's start with the first of them. Mark Twain, born in Missouri, known as Samuel Langhorne Clemens. That was his real name. He achieved modest success as a journalist, where sometimes he would write under the pen name Mark Twain. And I'm told that the basis for that was the phrase that he had heard when he was working aboard steamboats on the Mississippi River. Twain began publishing articles and books, and I'm sure our listeners have heard of many of his books. One of them is The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and of course there was others too. He's also known for speaking engagements around the world, and it was on one of these global tours that over 3 days in July of 1895 that he visited Winnipeg for the first and only time.
Had he visited Canada before?
Oh, yeah. This was, in fact, his fourth visit to Canada, the previous three having been confined to Quebec and Ontario. And that kind of makes sense, you know, bigger places. This was in the early 1880s. But at that time, well, he hadn't been really developed into what he became when he was in Winnipeg. You know, he was the king of American humor when he arrived here, and he disembarked from his train. He probably walked over to the Manitoba Hotel that wasn't very far away. It was at the corner of Main Street and Water. And by the way, the Manitoba was literally the swankiest hotel in town. It was just 3 years old, and it offered every conceivable luxury. So, of course, it was the logical place for someone of Twain's stature to stay. But incidentally, the hotel's life was short. It was destroyed by fire in early 1899, 4 years after Twain's visit. And the site today, it's occupied by the Federal Building, in case anybody's curious.
Okay, so where were Twain's performances held?
You know, this took me a while to figure out, because they said they took place in the Selkirk Hall. And at first I thought, he went to Selkirk? But no, it was the name of a hall here in Winnipeg at the corner of Logan and Stanley Streets. And it had begun in 1882. In fact, it was one of the early buildings as Winnipeg was starting to really explode in size. Initially, it was a Presbyterian church, and later it became the largest public auditorium in Winnipeg. Now, it's long gone. It was demolished back just a little over 100 years ago in 1923. But in 1895, when Twain was here, it was the only indoor space large enough for an event of this magnitude. So the performances were held over two evenings, Friday, the 26th of July, and Saturday, the 27th of July. Admission, it started at 25 cents, which, of course, sounds like a really bargain today. That was about $3.75 in today's money. But it went up from there.
And what did the performances entail?
They were about 90 minutes in length, and typically they involved readings from Twain's more popular works. In this case, apparently he read from six of his, either his books or some of his essays. But the program was different on the two nights, Friday and Saturday. And the idea, it makes sense too, that that way people would have a reason to come back. You know, he came back the one night, well, you'd want to hear the other stories that he'd tell the following night. And they were apparently, the audiences, appreciative of Twain's subtle humor. I came across a newspaper account that had been published after the first evening, and this is a quote. The celebrated Jumping Frog of Calaveras County, that's one of his essays, was an old friend to the audience assembled, and they hailed Mr. Clemens's rendering of the story with much laughter. This may be said of Mark Twain's work generally, that it is so full of real, vivid, everyday life, human emotions, joys and sorrows, and his characters are not merely creatures of the author's brain, but counterparts or copies of living boys and men. It really resonated with the audience, and they really got into it, apparently. Well, after the Saturday performance, they held a reception for Twain at the exclusive Manitoba Club, not far from his hotel. Then he went back to a night's rest, and then it was just on his way. He got back on the train, headed back to the United States, continuing on his world tour.
a successful stay for Mark Twain in Winnipeg.
Exactly.
It sounds like.
And Winnipeg, of course, at that time was really starting to explode. And so I could see how he might, you know, justify a stopping in what you might think is a fairly small place relative to some of the, you know, major world centers that he was stopping.
Okay, let's turn now to Buffalo Bill.
Right. Well, he was born in Iowa. And what I didn't realize is that he had a Canadian father in addition to an American mother. He was named William Frederick Cody. And, well, he came to Canada. In fact, lived quite a lot of his childhood at Mississauga, Ontario. Ultimately, though, he returned to the United States. And, in fact, during the American Civil War, he served in Union forces. After his discharge, he held a contract to supply railway construction workers in the western U.S. with bison meat. And he's said to have killed over 4,000 bison over 18 months. And as a result of that, he acquired the nickname Buffalo Bill. But, you know, he just wasn't a celebrity at this time. He was relatively unknown, and it was really only the later experiences that he had with the U.S. Army that turned him into a global celebrity.
And what was that experience?
It occurred in 1869. He was working as an Army scout in Colorado, and he was involved in what was later named the Battle of Summit Springs. Unfortunately, 35 indigenous people were killed during that event, and in the early 1870s, I guess Cody began to sort of take advantage of that experience when he offered shows that featured dramatized reenactments of his exploits, including things like these battles that he'd been involved with the cavalry. In 1883, he established Buffalo Bill's Wild West, and it was sort of a circus-like exposition that he toured throughout the U.S. and Europe to widespread acclaim. You know, there's newspaper stories all over the world of his, you know, because this was really exotic stuff. You know, people didn't have the internet and television and all these other things. They had these romanticized notions of what the Wild West was like, and Cody brought it to their doorstep. So, in fact, in August of 1910, he brought his entourage to Winnipeg in what he billed as his farewell tour.
Ooh, tell me more about his entourage.
Well, it typically engaged a large number of white and indigenous people. He gave meaningful employment to quite a number of indigenous people in those days, including noteworthy figures like Chief Sitting Bull and Métis leader Gabriel Dumont. And the plan was to reenact events from Western U.S. history. Now, for his Winnipeg appearance, Cody was accompanied by a second group of reenactors led by another famous showman named Gordon William Lilly, known more popularly as Pawnee Bill. On the 20th of August, 1910, the performers disembarked from a train and they began setting up a huge canvas tent on an open field at the corner of Main Street and Matheson Avenue. The tent was supposedly big enough for up to 12,000 spectators. I just have this mental picture of this just enormous tent. And to get into the tent, to be able to watch the performance, you could buy a ticket, sort of a rush ticket for 50 cents. Or if you wanted a reserved seat to, you know, ensure that you got a pretty good view, that was a buck. And that equals about $33 today. And, you know, that's still pretty significant money.
And what did the Wild West show look like?
It occurred over 2 days, the 22nd and 23rd of August, 1910. And each day there were performances at 2 in the afternoon and 8 in the evening. I think the best way to describe the show is by reference to a newspaper advertisement for it that I found in some of the old newspapers. One of the highlights of the event was a recreation of that Battle of Summit Springs. And, well, you know, I think the only way really to describe it is to use their own words, which were frankly characteristic of the time. This is an exact quote. "It was a thrilling engagement between the crafty and relentless red man and the courageous and victory-crowned soldiery of Uncle Sam." You know, and we might be horrified by that language today, but of course that was the sort of things they talked about. The show also featured displays of horsemanship and riflery that were meant to demonstrate, and again, a quote, "real rough riders who know nothing of fear, but possess surpassing expertness in equestrian skill." You know, just all these superlatives that you just had to be there.
Yeah, very theatrical. You said that his visit was billed as a farewell tour. Did Buffalo Bill ever return to Manitoba?
In fact, I went back to those historical newspapers, and sure enough, although he had billed his 1910 appearance as his first, last, and only appearance, Well, he actually did come back in 1914. He was part of a circus, not the Wild West show, incidentally. He had by this time sold his circus to another group, and he toured for a while with them because he was just so well known that just advertising his name was a guarantee of attendance.
Do we have any photographs for either of those visits?
Yeah, now this is the really surprising part to me. You know, there are, as far as I know, no photos of Mark Twain's visit when he was here in Winnipeg. You know, and despite the fact that there were numerous professional photographers at the time, but there was at least one photo taken of Buffalo Bill. It's at Upper Fort Garry Gates, and you see Buffalo Bill sitting in the sort of the middle of the picture, surrounded by some of his performers, many of whom were Indigenous in full costume. And that photo was subsequently colorized and put on a postcard. And of course, because it's on a postcard, there's many copies sent around the world. And so, in fact, a lot of them survive today. I have one in my personal collection. So we do have at least one visual reminder, but that's really the only one of this Wild West show. And that really surprises me because it was literally a world famous event. Coming to Winnipeg, I would have thought there would be piles of pictures taken. But there's just, as far as I know, one.
Okay, so we have two famous Americans who visited Winnipeg, but there were many others.
As we went into the vaudeville era, you know, performers of all sorts would come here. People like Harry Houdini, later, and many years later, Bob Hope. We could talk about these later visits here at some point and perhaps work in a few other famous categories, not just performers of the stage. And so that may be maybe a future episode of Abandoned Manitoba.
I'm up for it, Gordon, if you are.
I am.
Thank you. What's up for next week?
Well, in my youth, if someone wished to get a hold of me, they would do so at Vernon26213. Now, our listeners of a certain age will surely recognize that word and number combination. But for those who don't, all will be explained next week.
Thanks, Gordon.
Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.